All right, hi everybody, and welcome to lecture 68 in this American History program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. Continuing where we left off yesterday, but we're going to focus in particular here on what I think is a really crucial awareness, understanding that we need to have if we're going to walk away from studying American history and get it in a really crucial, essential way. And so yesterday I kind of indicated that we're going to be heading in an interesting direction. I gave you a little bit of a teaser in effect and said, well, America is going to change and is going to evolve from this original concept that the founding fathers had, and is going to turn into something similar but not the same. And I gave that a name. I called it, and I will explain as we proceed, I called it a constitutional democracy. So we're going to work our way towards that. That is quite a challenging thesis in a way, and it is one that is original to me. So, you know, it's going to be my responsibility and my my purpose to demonstrate that to you as appropriate. But part of what I want to do on the way there is also make sure that to address something that is actually really difficult to address. And it's difficult because, I mean, I've been studying history all my adult life and made it my responsibility, my professional responsibility to become a historian and a teacher. And I've looked at, you know, basically the entire history of mankind and come away with what I think is quite a strong understanding of what that history is worth and what it can do for us and so on. And I feel really pained by the fact that in general, in the culture around us, that value is not recognized. And that most people do not benefit from what I see as this crucial value. And that it is just not common to understand the past and carry it with oneself as a value and so on. And part of that, which is a part of it that really, quite frankly, really upsets me, is that people have learned kind of snippets of history here and there from a wide variety of sources, and come away from it with certain views that I think are really unfortunate, if not egregiously wrong. And one of them is a negative view of the founding fathers pertaining to slavery. And we're gonna follow this story over the course of the next chapter, next month or so in the course. We're gonna follow the story of the challenge of slavery and what it took to resolve it. And I hope, this to me is a great challenge, and I don't know yet if I'll pull it off quite as well as I would like to. But my hope is that you'll walk away from this particular segment with a proper appreciation of this issue. Not a facile kind of, there's a term that I learned once. It's a presumption concerning the founding fathers, that just because they had slaves, they were bad. And that we can look down on them. And this presumption is called the presumption of modernity. It's the presumption of the modern person to look back on history and judge the people of the past from a context that does not apply, and allow oneself to look back on them and look down on them from this high and mighty position. Bria, go ahead.
In my point of view, if someone had a slave since whenever, it would be kind of normal. So when someone just says, okay, we're not supposed to have slaves anymore, you're kind of like, wait, what? What's happening? I want my slaves.
Okay, totally, yeah. Right, that's a good way of looking at it, because obviously today you would never have such a thought, right? But had you been living 200 years ago, no, more like 200 years ago, you would have had that thought. That's exactly the point that I'm trying to make here. So I'm glad you're on board, in that sense, that you appreciate, we've talked about this before. It's about having historical empathy. Being able to put yourself back in somebody else's context and understand what life was like and what it is that you would have taken for granted had you been alive at the time and how you would have acted and so on. And in that context, I come away with, and to me, this is a tremendous value, and I'm really almost desperate to pass it on to you. I come away with an almost pure appreciation of the Founding Fathers, and an almost blemished admiration for them. Even though, and this is the hard part, and this is what's kind of striking about it and weird, even though they had slaves. Or most of them did, not all of them did. But I'm thinking in particular, for instance, Thomas Jefferson is a notorious case of a founding father who did have slaves. George Washington had slaves. Patrick Henry had slaves. So the ones in the South in particular, for reasons that are quite complicated, and it's actually out of context for us to analyze because it's too complicated. But for reasons, for certain reasons, slavery was much more common in the South. And so those founding fathers had slaves, and yet I don't fault them for it. And to me, I find that to be quite a remarkable thing, to be able to hold that view. And I want to see if I can get you, at least, not necessarily to agree with me, because my view is one that I hold on the basis of an entire professional career of studying history. Not beyond that, philosophy, and there's a whole basis for my judgment. So I couldn't possibly transmit that to you in a class like this. What I really am more hopeful to transmit to you is just some of what's required, an appreciation of some of what's required in order to contend with this question in a meaningful way and not get trapped by what I see out there is a lot of facile kind of thinking on this topic. And in particular, this presumption of modernity. This trap that a lot of people fall in who don't study history or haven't learned history, that they can very, in a kind of simple way, transfer their context to a situation in the past in which their values are not present and yet feel completely justified in using their code of values to judge people in the past. So this is, I think you can tell just from how I'm striving to formulate this here, that it's not an easy topic. Right? It's slavery. And believe you me, I mean, hopefully you're not getting the wrong impression here. Slavery is wrong. So I think pretty much everybody here, we moderns, are quite clear on that. And, you know, we cherish the fact, or should at least, cherish the fact that we don't live in a world that has a lot of slavery in it. We do live in a world with slavery. Most of us don't necessarily aren't aware of it. Americans are quite fortunate in that regard, but there's plenty of slavery in the world. There's plenty of slaves in the Islamic world. There's plenty of slavery in Africa. There's plenty of slavery in India. So there is a lot of slavery in the world still. We don't have to face it every day. But we're fortunate. We don't live with it. And we live in a culture that has had enough time and has enough distance between it and slavery to be able to comfortably look at it from the outside and say it's wrong. But it is tricky because throughout history, as we've talked about before, and I'm returning to this because I can't just kind of pass by it quickly and hope that we'll just kind of slip past it and we won't tackle it because it's a hard question. It's just, I can't do it that way. So it is a hard question, and because of that, I think it's my job to take it on and talk to you about it in a way that hopefully will give you the tools you need to think about it properly. Or at least give you a leg up, and who knows? I mean, you know, it's one class, one week, one month of history at our house is not the end all and be all on any such topic, right? So my job is mostly to give you a value, give you a spur, give you an encouragement to not fall for what I see a lot of people falling for. That's it. That's kind of how I see it. I want to equip you to be intellectually independent and not fall into the trap that I see too many people falling into. Because, again, the value here is being able to enjoy, appreciate, indeed, celebrate the greatness of the United States without constantly having a bad taste in your mouth about certain things. Because you feel as though you kind of have to, under your breath, constantly be apologizing for stuff that seems bad. When in fact, I don't think you do. And that you shouldn't have this sense of it being so unfortunate, tainted would be a good word, I think. Because I don't think that it is. So today's lecture is called The Contradiction. And it's all about trying to come to a proper context of thinking in order to understand precisely that. A contradiction in the founding of America. That contradiction, right up front, is between rights and slavery. The contradiction is between, let's go ahead and share my screen with you. The contradiction is between the heroic principles that were enunciated by the founding fathers in the Declaration and the practice of slavery, which was embedded in American culture as a heritage imported from Europe, imported from all of history, and part of American culture like every other. This is a contradiction. Which means to say that you can't uphold individual rights and tolerate slavery at the same time. Doing that puts you in a position, we could use different words, hypocrisy might be such a word. And I think a lot of people think of the founders as being hypocrites. They were not. But the problem is, if you do in fact uphold such a contradiction, you are upholding an untruth and an injustice at the same time as you're proposing to do that which is true and good. And that's untenable. You can't be a good person at the same time as acting in the opposite way. So that's the trick, is figuring this out. What's to be made of the fact that this was the case? And how do we judge people in history in a situation like this? So I have a couple things that I think need to figure in this, in our thoughts. And the first one that I want to talk about is the issue of judging another person and how you have to do that to get it right. I'm not going to say, and I will not say here, that you should not judge the Founding Fathers or any other person. I think that moral judgment is a very important thing that human beings need to do. And that justice is a very important virtue. So that's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is, if you're going to do it, you've got to do it right. And the doing it right, especially with regard to an individual or a country, which is even, you know, obviously much more complicated, it has to do with understanding that human beings are a sum of choices and actions and values and thoughts. And that when you see somebody doing something immoral, or when you see somebody make a bad choice or acting incorrectly, if you're going to judge that, you need to do it in its full context, which means understanding what the sum of that person is. That's step one here in thinking about this topic that I want to bring to your attention. Is that judging somebody morally has to be done in the full context of who they are. And I want to try to personalize this to make it as vivid and compelling for you as it can be. And I think a good way to personalize it is to think about yourself. Because and for me, it's a great way to personalize it also to think about myself. Because each and every one of us has in their lives committed immoralities of one sort or another. And I do not want to delve into, you know, anybody's personal struggles in any really, really profound way here. Really, what I would want to do, and I don't want to upset anybody about something like that in particular, but just think about the little things in your life in particular. Like the various lies you've told your parents over the course of your childhood. And I know you've done it because I don't think it's possible not to, actually. I think that the virtue of honesty, for instance, is a virtue that you have to acquire, and that it requires actually an understanding of its importance in order to practice fully. And every one of us has lied to their parents. Especially as a child, you know, my son tries little white lies all the time. Whether, you know, he wants to play Minecraft for a certain, you know, for a little bit longer time. And so he will not, you know, admit to having been playing it for a certain amount of time. He'll try to finagle his way to getting a little bit more. It's a tiny lie. And a little tiny lie about getting a treat. A chocolate or a cookie or something, or little things, or finding ways to play mom against dad and stuff like that. Little tricks and lies, and we do it. Everybody does it. Now, those things are definitely not positive things, right? They're negative, and they don't speak well of us when we do them. However, look at that record in your own personal life of those lies that you've told your family, your parents, and so on. And think about what it adds up to in your life overall. Do you feel like a bad person for having committed those acts? And why? Or why not? Bria?
Well, when you're little, you don't really have a whole ton of conscience. When you get older, you're kind of like, that wasn't really a good decision.
Okay, that's a really good point, right? So you develop an awareness of it over time, which is really good. And then and the older you are, the more mature you are, you do look back on those things, and they do have a way of bothering you. So I agree with you, Bria, that, yeah, you're right, that they do bother you, right? But do you, even though that's the case, right? Assuming, and I'm pretty sure it applies here, everybody here is basically a good person. So assuming that to be the case, what do those events add up to in your life, in your thoughts about yourself? What are they? You walk around constantly morally condemning yourself for those missteps when you were young. And just constantly tearing yourself apart for those little lies. I certainly hope not, because it would be completely wrong. Right? Because you should of course not feel good about them. And on occasion, they will haunt you. But guess what? What is that a sign of? The fact that they haunt you. Timothy?
It's a sign that you... it's a sign that you are actually a good person because you feel bad for what you've done.
Okay, right. So generally you feel good, but those things make you feel bad, right? So that's that thing that you could call it a conscious, where you feel bad about those things, and they haunt you, and presumably also you strive not to do that kind of thing anymore, right? So being a person who's immoral means that you recognize those things that you did badly. You might even feel bad about them, but you continue to do them. Or you do it worse. You continue and you escalate and you continue to do that even though you know it's wrong and even though you feel bad. That's the definition of immorality. Knowing what's wrong and choosing it. right? But generally we don't do that. And but we have these flaws in our personal record in life that we carry them with us. They haunt us. We feel bad about them, and they're very important because we're good people. We use those to help us continue to be good. So when we judge ourselves and if other people judge us in relation to those wrongs, it's very important that those judgments come in their full context, right? Because if somebody takes something that you did all out of context and condemns you for that, what happens in your mind when, I don't know if you've experienced this, but I've experienced moments like this in my life where condemnation and moral judgment comes all out of context. What happens then? What in your mind, what happens, Bria?
Well, you could lose your sense of goodness. Like, you could think of yourself too badly, and then you could literally lose your conscience and just be doing bad things all the time.
Well, yeah, that could be one outcome. Hopefully not. I mean, that's a very, very tragic outcome. If you allowed somebody that was judging you incorrectly to overcome your own sense of self-worth, that would be very sad indeed. But assuming you know pretty well that you're a good person and you understand that an action was bad, but then you are, you know, outrageously condemned for that action, what happens in your mind if you at least understand generally, you know, what that immorality was in light of everything else about you? What does that condemnation amount to then if it's all out of proportion? And what effect does it have on you? You don't feel like you would know? What does it feel like when somebody condemns you for something that's not fair? Yeah, you feel wronged, right? It's an injustice. And your reaction is defensive. And so, yeah, you definitely feel wronged and you lose a little respect, a little trust, a little of that important benevolence that links you to other people because you've been wronged. So it's very important. This part of my, hopefully I'm getting through here is the idea that judging has to come in context. And that when we judge ourselves, for instance, in our own personal character, as good people, it's really important to judge yourself and to judge others in context. And not disproportionately, for instance, condemn people for things they've done or in relation, right? So it's yeah, I like your expression, Bria. You got to know the whole story. Which doesn't mean you cannot, you know, condemn somebody for immorality, but it has to be done properly in context. All right, so that's really crucial. And that part of the context here, this is the second part that I want to say in terms of what I think is important to be mindful of when you're thinking of this topic of the founders and slavery. Is each and every one of us is influenced by others. And in particular, we are profoundly influenced in our lives by our parents, our family, our friends, our teachers. There are few people out there. There's a set of people out there that have a huge influence on us and shape us and condition us in various ways. And that also has to be a part of the whole picture when we think of somebody. And that can be really difficult to do. Because You know, out there today, one of the things I notice as a historian is, and you may notice this in the news and in different things that you're seeing out there in the world. There is, for instance, a ton of racism in the world today. A ton of it out there. It's everywhere, it seems. It's really tragic. On the one hand, you see, like, you see stories about white people who think they're superior to black people, and then on the other hand, you see stories about black people that are taught that white people are all evil. And I'm a historian, so man, you should see the dose that I take in, because history is full of it. Chinese people hate Japanese people. Polish people hate German people. Arabs hate Jews. And this and that and so on and so on. It's just, oh my gosh. Now, this is all tragic and it's terrible and it's wrong. Racism would be another thing that you would think most of us today are pretty clear on the wrong of it. And yet it's rampant. And part of it, really sadly, is that it's passed on from generation to generation. And so that makes it hard, because when you encounter somebody, especially a young person, that has been taught certain beliefs, you have to take that into account about them too, when you're judging them. Because if you grow up in an environment in which you're exposed exclusively to a certain set of values, and those could be profoundly immoral, but that's all you know, then it's very hard for you to actually see the truth. Right? Because how often do you radically contradict your parents on something fundamental? How often do you in your life look around at authority figures in your world and just jettison what they have to say and insist that everybody else is wrong? And how did you, and if you've ever done that, how did you come to that, right? How did you think about what it was like to do that and what was required? It's rare, it's difficult, it can be quite a challenging, extremely challenging experience, right? And especially if it's pervasive. And so when you're judging somebody else in terms of an issue concerning their values as well, that's another thing that's part of that whole picture that you have to take in order to figure out exactly what you're going to think of them. And by the way, how do you, because this is now going to be our transition into the founders and the subject of slavery in the founding. How do you judge somebody like that? Like, if you are a child, let's say you grow up, and there's plenty of it today, so I'll choose this example. You're taught to revile Jewish people. I see that a lot today. It's really abhorrent to me, but I see a lot of it, and it's called anti-Semitism. And so it's very common in Europe. It's common even in America, and it rears its ugly head all over the place. And so how are you going to judge somebody that is basically imbibes that from their family, from the culture at large, because it's so prevalent? How do you, here's actually what I meant to ask is, if you're a person that encounters that a lot, how do you get past it? In other words, what does it take to reject falsehoods, especially when they're all pervasive and they're all around you? And what does it take? What's that trait that you have to have. I'll see how many ways I can ask the question, give you the hint that I want to give you. What's that virtue that you need to exercise in order to get past all that stuff that got foisted on you? Not by choice, but just because you happened to be where you were and lived where you lived and knew the people that you knew. What's that virtue that you need to exercise to get to the truth? Definitely not humility. Because if you're humble, you're not going to question and you're not going to reject. And critical thinking is too vague. No, come on, guys, we talked about it yesterday. Oh my gosh. What do you have to do, Alexander?
Courage?
Yeah, you need courage. But courage applies as kind of an add-on to another virtue that you need first. Independence. Because what is independence? Just accepting what everybody else tells you? What's independence? At root. Alexander?
Thinking for yourself.
At root, yes. At root, thinking for yourself. Then choosing values and acting in the world based on. But at root, it's thinking for yourself. So this is how, you know, when you are taught things that are immoral or rational and you've got to sort through them, it's you that has to do it. And people can do this, and they deserve an enormous amount of credit in any context where they're raised this way. And this is a really crucial part of moral judgment, is that when you encounter a person, depending on how old they are, they've had a certain amount of time to be independent. And that goes into what you are allowed to think about them. Because the virtue of independence says, think for yourself. No matter what everybody around you is claiming, look at the world, think about it yourself. So you're taught that a certain person, because of their race, is inferior, or that a certain race of people is inferior. And this is just a part of your life and context. And then you have to look around and see whether or not that's true. And in the modern context, there's absolutely no excuse. Right? There's no way to look at, there's no way to look today at black people and say, oh, black people are inherently inferior to white people. Or to look at Chinese people and say, oh, they're inherently inferior to Japanese people. Or, you know, any such, you conjure it, it doesn't matter. Right? There's no way to do that because the world is just full of accomplished, impressive, amazing people of every kind. Because the evidence is overwhelming that every person is an individual. And so you can't, it's impossible. To be a racist today requires a massive amount of evasion. It's impossible to be a moral adult person today and be a racist. But put yourself back in an earlier time. Put yourself back in a time when your parents had slaves and their parents had slaves. And throughout the entire history of the world, slavery was normal. And in which your religious texts do not contradict slavery. your standard, the teachers in your world that are teaching you right and wrong, don't attack slavery. In which you look around at the world and the evidence that you have is all slanted as well. Because you look around you and you see, in the case of people in America, you see these poor people here on the left-hand side of the story. They're from Africa. They were primitive when they left. They came to America and were treated the way that they were treated and lived the lives that they lived. How impressive did they become? If you're going to look at them independently, what do you see? You see poor people who are illiterate and who have been demeaned by their station in life, which is no fault of their own. But the outcome is what? What would you be like if you lived your life as a slave compared to the life that you anticipate having? What would you look like at the end of that story? How impressive would you be? Take you, strip away the literacy, strip away all the math skills, strip away any and all use of computers, strip away any walk you've ever taken down the street or on the beach, and replace all of those things with scrubbing the floor. Who are you at the end? You're not just, yeah, of course you're depressed, but beyond that, I mean, just think about what kind of human being do you get to become when your essence as a human being is denied and you are not able to fulfill yourself and to flourish, Bria?
There's a word for it.
I like what you're striving for here. This sense of yeah, everything is.
You just don't have anything. It's like you don't belong to yourself.
Yeah, that's a really deep statement right there, which is true. You don't even belong to yourself, right? This idea of the pursuit of happiness, you don't have it. You don't have the means of elevating yourself. And you're denied the opportunity, and so of course you become, you end up being a far lesser version of the person that you possibly could have become. So this is really devastating to anybody that wants to understand the immorality of slavery, but who's living with slavery. Because in terms of intellectually penetrating the issue, independently thinking about it, if you look around at the slaves, they are inferior. Which, if you have a prejudice, is a kind of reinforcing of your prejudice. But what do you have to be able to figure out, which is very difficult to figure out? Why are the slaves inferior? Alexander?
Because they've been scrubbing floors all their
life. Because they're slaves, exactly. It's the reverse, right? You can't get the causality mixed up here. They're not slaves because they're inferior. They're inferior because they're slaves. So this is something that, as an independent thinker, you would have had to work on and think about and contend with in a person in a society where slavery was normal. You would have had to work on this and struggle against it. So these are just the moral issues. And I don't want to take up too much more time because it's a pretty heavy topic and I don't want to, I know I'm already at risk of overdoing it, but just to now take this moral issue and just hopefully you've had a chance to it'll spur you to think about how challenging it is to get it right to judge somebody in terms of these issues. But now imagine an entire society like that. How do you fix that? How do you change? You know what? This is what it amounts to. How do you change the world? Because that's what it is. To get rid of slavery is to change the entire world. How do you do that? Bria, how do you do it?
You have to get enough people on your side.
Okay. Well said. That's true. That's true. And you can't just snap your fingers, right? So you've got to start somewhere. You've got to take steps. You have to become a person that advocates for certain things and starts to make changes. It doesn't do you any good, of course, to attempt to do more than is possible. Otherwise, you'll be frustrated and you will fail. But you have to do everything that you can. And in my judgment, the Founding Fathers did everything that was possible. Which is why I don't have a single haunting of a feeling of being haunted or of their record being tainted with regard to slavery. And in particular, which we've already seen but we'll return to, in founding the United States, they passed the Northwest Ordinance to prevent slavery from spreading into the Northern Territory. That was the best they could do. As part of the compromise to create the Constitution, they agreed that the slave trade with Africa would be abolished so that no more slaves would be brought to America. And the plan was that they would gradually create conditions whereby slavery would in effect disappear because it couldn't be sustained any longer and it wouldn't make sense to keep on doing it. Bria.
I'm probably skipping ahead of you, but then there's the next step, which is completely getting everybody onto their side.
Yeah, well, yeah, now that's going to come later with some others which deserve some special credit. And those are known as the abolitionists. So we'll talk about them. But you are getting ahead of things here. We're still talking about the founders and the contradiction. And so what they did was set up conditions as best they could to get rid of slavery eventually, which in any other way was impossible for them to solve this problem. And we're going to leave on this particular note here, that for them the tragedy and the drama, which was just unimaginable proportions, was as simple as this: in order to remain independent, in order for the United States to succeed at all in coming into being and representing a new set of values, which meant individual rights. If they were going to do that, they were going to have to compromise with these different cultures, the states in the South where slavery was normal and accepted and could possibly be abolished immediately. They had to accept that and compromise to bring all the states together. So this is the tragedy. In order to uphold rights, the founders had to accept slavery. It's a shocking thing to say, and it is a contradiction in a sense. But I think it has to be thought of that way. I think if you say, you know, for instance, walk around with a kind of self-sufficient thought, the founders had slaves, therefore they're hypocrites and they're bad and their record is tainted and they're not heroes and they're terrible people. And, you know, okay, so what you're doing there is you're having a half thought and you're allowing yourself to presume to make complete moral judgment on another human being, not based on the full context and the entire history behind it and all the facts that you need to judge them. You're just allowing yourself to be that presumptuous modern person, and not see this fundamental fact, which is such a challenge. In order to uphold individual rights in principle, the founders had to accept slavery temporarily. In order to succeed, to give birth to a country that might, for the first time in the history of mankind, represent individual rights and create a new and beautiful vision of what human beings could and couldn't be with each other ever, they had to accept the conditions that they found around them. A world that couldn't just be changed by snapping its fingers. They had to find a way to move forward by accepting the world they were in. I think this is a really profound and positive lesson. And one of the most important things you can take away from history. Because that's the way it is all the time. You can't change the world without first understanding what it is, accepting it for what it is. And you go from there. That has to be the starting point. So today, if you want to make America and the world a better place, you're in the same boat. You have to look at the world in all its imperfections and know it and cherish it in all of its complexity and go from there. And judge it properly. And then act. And that's what I see in this situation. In the fullness of the story of the founders, they inherited slavery. They lived in a world that was full of slavery, but they independently arrived at a conviction that human beings have individual rights and created a country to champion those rights and took steps to begin the elimination of slavery in that country. Doing as much as was possible. And not more. How should we judge that? I know where I stand. So, we're going to move forward, and in a sense, I've said my piece on this question, which is a controversial question, and it's not my intention to force feed you all of my values. So, you know, when it comes to the founders, what I see is the most heroic generation of political leaders in the history of mankind. And so, as an act of justice, I wanted to spend some time helping you to see that even this flaw that we're going to be contending with here in American history is not nearly the thing that it is made out to be by too many people today. And that, in fact, we stand in a future without slavery more than any other reason, because of the founders. Because they told the world that human beings have rights. And they meant it. And America, the heroic culture that it has been, eventually even took the incredible step of going to war with itself to get it done. that is what's coming. So, all right, folks. Hopefully that wasn't too much Mr. Powell heavy-handed philosophy preaching type of lecture. And I promise also that on that particular note, it will be the only one on this particular theme. We will look now at the historical evolution of this contradiction in particular and examine how eventually it just came to be that it could not be resolved. Sadly, the answer was, the answer of the founders turned out to be false. They were wrong about how to resolve slavery. And the generations that followed them failed to follow through. And that's the main reason why they were wrong. And consequently, eventually we get to the point where America has to have the Civil War. So we'll follow it through and we'll look back on it from our comfortable position in the present now that slavery is done with. Okay. Thanks, everybody. I know it was a long and heavy one, so take it easy. Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye.
Goodbye.